Hello everyone and welcome to today's call called How to Experience True Freedom. My name is Damien Sen and it's a great pleasure having you on the line today. In a few moments from now, I'll be introducing our very special guest, Alan Gompers. But before I do, please allow me to share how this call will work today, particularly if this is your first peopleyoushouldmeet.com call that you've tuned into. Now, we're going to be on the call for around about an hour, and over the course of the hour, I'll be asking Alan a whole series of questions on our topic. Some of the questions will be my own, but the vast majority of questions will have actually been submitted in through the site by you, our listeners. Now, I first came across Alan's work weeks ago, quite synchronistically, actually. My girlfriend and I, Katrina, were walking along a famous shopping street called Abbot Kinney in Venice in California, and we bumped into quite a magical bookstore called the Mystic Journey Bookstore, and we were just looking at the window of the store and looking at all the interesting events that they had upcoming, and there was one notice in particular that really caught our imagination, and there was a notice promoting Alan's upcoming talk there, and literally shared a little bit about his story and all the incredible things that he has gone through in his lifetime, and we immediately wanted to be a part of that workshop and see what it was all about. And I guess it was at that stage we realised the talk had actually kicked off about 50 minutes ago, and luckily we were able to get in there and get the last 15 minutes or so of Alan's talk, and we were really inspired. Went up and connected with Alan after the talk, and it was just like an instant bond and an instant connection. Then took away Alan's book called Maximum Security and literally couldn't put it down. It was one of the most riveting reads that I've had in recent memory, as Alan just shared his own journey of awakening and really connecting with the true freedom that exists inside us all. So it's very exciting to now have Alan on the show, and I'm not going to share too much about Alan's story, but over the past two decades, he's actually been a revered meditation teacher, and I will be getting him to share his journey in terms of actually stepping on that path. But without further ado, it gives me great pleasure to welcome to the call our very special guest, Alan Gompers. How you doing, Alan?
Great to be here, Damien. Good to hear your voice as usual.
Welcome.
Thanks a lot.
Now, Alan, I thought we'd actually just start by exploring this whole concept of meditation. I know meditation actually brings up lots of questions for people when they are starting out and trying to access the power that comes from it. And I was just wondering if you could actually just begin by demystifying what exactly meditation is and how it can actually help us guide back to freedom.
Well, you know, that's great. And I always enjoy, you know, talking about this before I even talk about anything. Because, as you know, words can have so many meanings. You ask 10 people what the meaning of love is, or what the meaning of God is, or truth, or wisdom, or anything, and you get 10, you generally get 10 different ideas or concepts around what that means to each one of them. So for most of the time, we're really not connecting. We're not really talking to each other. We're giving ideas about what we're saying at each other. And so there's never a direct connection. And so we never really, really bond, and we never understand, and we never really get what we're saying. So it's really important that we're all on the same page. When we use the term meditation, you know, it has such a variety of understandings that I've come across over the years. But just so we all know what we're saying here, meditation is not a practice. It's not about crossing your legs and closing your eyes and going off into some other dimension or some other world. Excuse me. But meditation is a state. It's a state of being. It's a direct experience with our own inner true self. And that connection is an experience, and it brings with it a sense of knowledge and understanding and clarity and an ability to perform at levels that literally boggle the mind. And what we want to do is we want to connect to that place And when we practice meditation, when we cross our legs and close our eyes, what we're doing is we're becoming more one-pointed, we're becoming more focused, we're actually pulling the energy within us towards a singular place so that we become in alignment with that wisdom and truth inside. And then we follow the guidance that comes from it. So meditation is not what we do, it's what we are.
That's beautiful. Now we see lots of people in the world seemingly pulling in many different directions, like the body leading one way, the mind leading another, as all these different fragmented parts try and take hold of the mind-body system. But I guess what you're really saying is a like an opportunity for all these parts to come together and be in alignment. And
you know, those moments, Damien, where we are together and we have that moment of epiphany or that moment where we go, wow, it feels so good to be with you, like we really connect. That feeling of connection is really a congealing of both energies to being one. Mm. And with it comes this sense of love and joy and freedom that go with it. Mm. And, you know, all of the great sages, all of the great beings, all of the greatest performers athletically and everybody else talk about the zone, talk about that state of freedom and that comes from that connection. And, you know, and have all told us that meditation is the final key to attain that freedom.
Mm.
There is no other way. And, you know, do I have a moment to share a little letter that I got?
Absolutely.
I think your listening audience might enjoy it. Hopefully you will too. I know for me, I never get tired of it. It's so powerful. It was sent by a guy who practices the same meditation that I have, and he's been doing it for over 24 years. And I'll share with you in one of the most bizarre circumstances that we could ever find ourselves. And meditation was so powerful and profound in his life that he felt that he needed to put it down in words what he was feeling. And this is what he said. He said, meditation has revealed so much truth and love in my life, which surrounds me and accompanies me everywhere I go. Everyone talks about love, but what does it really mean? I now realize, after 24 years, that love is a practice. It is a great practice. Being aware enough to speak about it, this love is only possible with great practice, with being very mindful, very focused, very centered, and very present. I still fall short, but meditating on my heart brings me back. Seeking the highest brings me back. I have had so many hard times all throughout my life. Many times I have faced a dark hour, and many times I have felt the sublime wisdom, power, and love of my meditation teacher. I have struggled with a regular meditation practice. Sometimes it is all I can do to sit quietly for 15 minutes a day, but I try always to bring those minutes into my life. The experience of meditation remains. It is always there with me. My message to everyone is this: meditation works, but only if you meditate. I do a lot of reading. I practice offering love wherever I go. I do a lot of contemplation, and sometimes I practice even silence. I have no discipline except this: love and seek the highest. My experience of life has changed utterly. All the suffering I have been through has melted away, because without that suffering, I would have never known love, and without love, I would have never known the great peace and freedom that is there always within me, waiting for me to recognize its presence. I greatly regret any suffering or pain I've caused others, and I will carry that sorrow willingly until the day I die. As for my own suffering, it is nothing. Life is glorious. It is a glorious gift. With all my heart, I thank you. With love, light, and laughter. On June 11th, Carl Chamberlain was executed on death row in a maximum security prison in Huntsville, Texas, where he had been incarcerated for the past 24 years, shortly after he wrote this letter.
Wow. That's phenomenal.
Damien, this, and all of you listening out there, this is the power of meditation. This man lived in the worst horror, facing death every single moment of his life for 24 years. And his only experience was love.
Hmm. Wow.
Huntsville, Texas has over 150 inmates on death row. It's the largest death row population in the country. Over 90 of those inmates, during the time they spent with Carl Chamberlain, began a regular daily meditation practice. And the warden of the prison told everyone after the execution that it completely changed death row and the whole prison energy.
Wow. That is absolutely amazing. Now, Alan, I mentioned that you also have a very interesting story to share, just in terms of how you've navigated your own life back to that exquisite place of freedom. And I was just wondering if you could share with people your own journey back to this place of beauty.
Have you got about 10 years?
No, in the book it was absolutely riveting, but within the confines of our time today, if you could share the highlights and the key points.
Sure.
As hard as that will be.
I would certainly do that. Well, you know, I think we all can relate to a word called fear. And for me, it was my closest associate, so to speak, from the time that I can remember since I was a little boy. And if we know anything about fear, although it is very debilitating and depleting and all kinds of negativity surrounding it, it is also a powerful, powerful force and a very powerful creative force on a certain level. It was, for me, the driving force in my life, because my experience, starting when I was little, was constantly, constantly around depression, loneliness, despair, and fear being the guiding force. And that fear projected me to go out into the world to find answers of how to get rid of it. I didn't know how. I was totally victimized by it. I had no idea about how to overcome it and how to get out of those horrible states. And so I went into everything that I thought might work, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, if you can imagine. Mm-hmm. And it led me to unspeakable material success. Mm. In real estate, in the stock market, I made more money than I can spend in a million lifetimes, the skies opened up and poured money on me. I poured my heart and soul into everything I did, and I had a professional fighter. I got into boxing. I was in real estate. I was a performer in rock and roll when it first began in the 50s with the doo-wop sound and records and performing, and I owned restaurants and nightclubs, and you name it, I did it. And everything that I touched, Damien, turned into gold. Mm. And these insidious feelings I had inside of me, instead of, you know, reaching a level of joy, continued to go downhill. Mm. And while I married a beautiful, beautiful woman, had four wonderful children, success beyond my wildest dreams. And at that moment in time, when I had thought I had made everything and had everything I ever thought should bring me happiness, I was that close to suicide. Mm. And I had run out of options. And I wound up on drugs and eventually started dealing drugs. And of course, I came home one night and there the police were waiting for me. And a year later, I found myself in a courtroom standing in front of a judge as he sentenced me to 15 years to life. Mm. The same sentence you get in New York for murder, an A1 felony. And I was literally handcuffed and removed from the courtroom right then and there. I never had a chance for bail or for any kind of reprieve until We retried the case or whatever. And I was locked up in a tiny little cell about the size of a small bathroom. And you know, Damien, I remember that night so well. Here I am in this cell. The door closes behind me. And I just sink to my knees. And everything in my life that I ever had, that was ever meaningful, that ever gave me support or a sense of identity and self-worth was all stripped away from me. Money, family, wife, children, business. Most of all, I was facing the rest of my life. And I might never, ever get out of jail again. And in that moment, the only thing I could touch were those feelings of loneliness and despair and fear. Screaming, I mean screaming inside me with an intensity that was so great that if I could have died on the floor right there, it would have been an act of mercy. And somehow I make it through the night. I'm sent out to the prison yard. 2,000 inmates, all, most of them lifers, scared to death. And I see a running track. I make my way to it and start to run, trying to keep myself from falling apart, which I was about to do. But I couldn't stop, and I broke down. And I was hysterical as I was running around the track. And I lost any control I had. And every emotion and feeling I had inside me just came pouring out of me. I couldn't stop it. Wow. And about 20 minutes later, I just found myself in a corner of the prison yard and looked up, my eyes closed, my legs crossed, and I found myself in a profound state of meditation, having absolutely no idea what I was doing. I had never meditated before. I didn't even know what meditation was.
Wow.
But when I opened my eyes again, I'm sitting on the floor up against the wall of the prison yard, feeling a sense of contentment and lightness and happiness I had never known in my life before.
Mm.
It was like flipping a switch on and off. I mean, 20 minutes prior to that, I was in the worst horror in my head than I'd ever been in my life.
Mm.
20 minutes later, I opened my eyes, and I'm feeling relaxed, composed, content, and even happy.
Mm.
And I had no idea what had happened to me. And when I got back to my cell, one of the inmates, I was in a block with 36 lifers, Damien. And one of them walked up and handed me a book. It had a picture of an Indian meditation master. He handed me the book, and my knees buckled. I nearly fell on my face. And I sat down on a bed and began to read this book. And I tell you, I've never read anything like it in my life. It was the most profound, powerful experience I've ever had. And the first thing he said, which blew my mind, was that the world and everything in it has absolutely no power over you. Your listening audience, I hope you're really, really going to hear this next thing I'm saying. What he said was, you have to choose to be unhappy. You have to choose to feel lonely. You have to allow someone or some situation to frighten you or intimidate you. Nothing or no one is doing anything to you. Nothing or no one has any power over you. You create it all yourself. You choose it all yourself. Now, up to that point, I was fine. But when he said that, when I read that, I said, how could anybody in the situation that I was in, the horror that I was in, ever tell me that I would choose to be here?
Mm-hmm.
Had I read that 2 hours prior to it, I would have tossed the book in the garbage and thought that this guy had lost his mind.
Mm.
But then I reflected back where I was a few hours before in the prison yard and coming out of that meditation and looking around me and seeing the guards, the prison wall, the gun towers, inmates walking around facing 15 years to life and possibly spending the rest of my life in prison with everything I had taken from me, feeling happier than I ever did before in my life.
Wow.
And I realized in that moment that this Indian meditation master knew something that I had never known was true before, that he knew the truth. I don't mean a truth. That I understood and experienced that he knew the truth and that I could trust it totally because it was my own experience. It wasn't something I had learned or given to me. Nothing had given this to me. It came from within me. And then I went on. I'll just, you know, I don't want to go too long because I don't want to take up all the time. But this last thing, Damien, is so critically important. What he said next was, and he was talking to the whole world, so I hope, I know this is internationally broadcasted, so I hope the whole world is listening, because what he said next was the most important shift and change in my whole life. He said, "Oh man, wake up. You've been sleeping too long. You have been looking out in the world for your happiness, your success, and your freedom. And as you've grown older, all you have found is loneliness, frustration, fear, and death." He said, "How can you expect to find happiness that is lasting in a place that doesn't last? How can you find joy in a place that is there and then it's gone? While you're holding your fame, if you make all the money in the world and marry and have the greatest children and family and make success beyond your wildest dreams, while you're holding all of that in your hands, it is dissolving right before your eyes. And in the end, even your body and your very life will be taken from you. And the world will betray you." But then he went on to say, "But what you're looking for does exist. You've only been looking for it in the wrong place. Turn from the world and go inside. Because deep within you, there's a place that knows no loneliness, knows no unhappiness, and is never afraid. And it is eternal. It never dies. That is who you are. You are a divine being. You are great beyond your wildest imagination. You are free. In your heart, there is pure freedom. Go there and live forever."
Wow, that's incredibly powerful.
Now, it was for me.
Amazing. It almost feels like we should take a couple of moments just to really allow that to permeate through each and every one of us on the call. It's a very, very powerful. Now, Alan, I just wanted to, I guess, look at for people that are, I guess, navigating that world of impermanence and coming up with experiences such as loneliness, frustration, disconnection. What's actually the first step that they need to take in order to navigate back to that eternal well of joy, love, and peace?
Well, you know, again, that's wonderfully stated, Damien. You know, it's a very simple question. Yeah, but, you know, you would think in its simplicity that it would have a simple answer, and guess what? It does. You see, a good way of seeing it is, you know, one day, when I was a kid, I used to set my, in those days we used alarm clock radios. You set the alarm clock for a station, and in the morning the station would start playing the music for a while to wake you up, and then the alarm would go off. And I would set it to, you know, I was a rock and roller as a kid, and that doo-wop station was my favorite station, and I played it all the time until my family was going just absolutely crazy hearing this over and over, and waking up to the morning to it was a bit too much. And my father used to say to me all the time, "Alan, please change the station. For goodness sakes, I can't take it anymore." And, you know, I'd always say, "Dad, you know, that's my music. I love it. I there's nothing else I want to listen to." And one day I, you know, out of respect for my father, I said, "Okay, I'll put on another station." And when I turned the station on the next day, I was awakened to that new station. And it was the sweetest sound I think I'd ever heard in my life. And you know, I was never aware of it.
Mm.
And you know, on the dial, you know the little dial in the radio?
Mm.
It was like turning it like maybe a fraction of an inch. And I tuned into this broadcast going on that had been going on all the time. Only I just never knew it. And it was the chatter of this other station that blocked me from experiencing that sweetness that I never knew was there.
Mm.
Metaphorically speaking, this is the mind versus the heart.
Mm.
What blocks that experience of freedom, that experience of love and joy, that zone that we get into sometimes and then try to find our way back to it, is because the mind is going off a mile a minute and it's drowning it out.
Mm.
But in meditation, what happens is, when we become focused, is the mind begins to calm down. Don't we all experience that when our mind is not racing all over the place, we feel more serene, more placid, more tranquil, we feel more clear, we feel happier, because the mind got quiet. And we're now tuning into that other station, that other broadcast, which is coming from the heart.
Mm. Mm. That's a really beautiful way of describing it, Alan. Mm. Now, before we actually take a couple of questions from listeners, I was just wondering if you could share like a case study or a story. Like, you've been teaching meditation for over 2 decades. Probably
three
a
decades.
Question.
Mike.
Three decades. If you could choose a story of someone who came to this work and actually managed to change the dial on their own radio station through your teachings and the wisdom and presence that you bring, are there any stories that immediately jump to mind?
Well, you know, I have lots of them, but there's one that I love a lot because one of the passions of my life is working with young people. Because, you know, in today's world, there's so much distraction. And there's so much, you know, kids just all over the place, and especially when they get to junior and senior high school. But I spoke at a high school, and the kids were really, you know, they filled the auditorium with about 300 teenagers.
Mm.
And they came in there, Damien, and they were bouncing off the walls. I am telling you, they were just literally hooting and hollering and carrying on. And especially when the principal of the school said that we have a speaker on meditation, they were just, they didn't want to hear that at all. And so they came in, and they were really, really going crazy. And finally, after I was introduced and I got up there, they calmed down a bit, and I spoke for about an hour. And as I got into my story, you can imagine when they heard a bit of my story, it had kind of like they didn't know what to do with it, and there was dead silence.
Wow.
I mean, dead silence for almost the rest of the whole program.
Wow.
And when the meditation ended, I asked the kids if they would like to share what meditation, because I did a meditation with them, short one for about 10 minutes. They actually did it.
Wow.
They snickered in the beginning, laughed a little bit, and then it was dead. I mean, you couldn't hear a pin drop.
Mm.
And initially, there was a hesitant response when I asked the kids what came up for them, what was their experience. And for most of the kids, their first experience with meditation, a completely foreign and certain idea, several hands went up. And then a 16-year-old kid stood up. And he shared with the entire group that the meditation, he found himself in a very unfamiliar but a very quiet place.
Mm.
And then he said he began to feel chills go all through his body and especially up and down his spine. And he said he didn't know what to make of it, and he found it very uncomfortable. He said he didn't like the feeling at all. But then he remembered me saying in my talk that meditation, especially when we first begin to practice it, can create all kinds of different experiences for people, even seemingly negative ones. But But I said what we need to remember is that alcoholics or drug addicts, as an example, when they go into withdrawal, appear to be extremely sick. Yet if they were able to stay with the process and not revert back to drugs or alcohol during the next few days, after a while, they begin to get free of the pain and suffering they're going through, and even more importantly, the attachment to their addiction. And the lesson that I said to them in all of this is, seeing it all in perspective, is that when we make an intention to go through the process of facing our addictions, we weren't really sick at all. We were actually getting well. We only appear to be sick. Nothing bad is really happening, and in the end, the body begins to detox and ultimately free ourselves of all of the demons, the emotions, the negativities that we're carrying inside of us. That's what meditation does. It actually purifies us of everything that is causing suffering and pain inside of us, and if we stand up to the process and allow it to happen, we get free of it. Mm-hmm. And I said, in the same way, I said, meditation is the ultimate medicine for our soul. And it frees us from all the negative emotions and addictions that our mind creates. And when I told the young man to be grateful that all of these poisons were being expelled and purified within him, and that the meditation process had begun to free him, there was a shift in his state.
Wow.
At that point, he said to me and to everybody, would it be okay if I came up and spoke to you after the program? And I said, sure. And when he came up to me, he seemed very shy and extremely self-conscious. He was very concerned about anybody hearing anything he might say to me. This was a 16-year-old kid.
Mm.
And so he didn't want anybody to know what was going on with him, if you know what I mean.
Mm.
And he opened the conversation by saying this. When he first came into the auditorium that day, he was one of the ringleaders, one of the kids who was making all the noise, talking so loudly and trying to disrupt things. He said he thought it was all a big joke and he didn't want to be there.
Mm.
Then he looked at me and his eyes began to fill up with tears.
Mm.
And then he said to me, I'm an alcoholic. Last night I went out drinking all night and I came to school drunk. I was drunk when I came into the program, and all throughout the program I was high. I can't help myself, he said. I'm totally out of control. But then he went on to say to me that when I describe my meditation experience to you, which I thought was so negative, you answered me by saying that it was actually meditation freeing me from my demons and my poisons.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, in that moment, I felt every part of me relax. The negative feelings I had completely went away. And as hard as it is to believe, in that moment, I became completely sober. I wasn't drunk anymore.
Wow. What an amazing gift to give to a 16-year-old kid.
16-year-old kid.
Amazing.
And, you know, they told me that this was, you know, a kid who came to school sometimes and not others. He was always causing trouble. He had drug problems, alcohol problems, emotional problems.
Mm.
And in that moment, he was a little boy, a little baby, who was completely open. And in that moment, he was free.
Wow. That's a beautiful story. Now, Alan, we've had questions come in from all around the world, and I thought I'd just kick off with one from Ruth, who is in the UK. And Ruth asks, do you believe you had to experience the life you did to achieve a deep understanding of what real freedom is? Do you believe it's your path to have taken to assist others in finding it without that long and testing journey?
Well, I believe the last part of it that I don't believe I know. And when I say I know, I don't mean I'm being arrogant. I know from my own experience, from my own guidance inside, that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. There is no doubt about it. And the fact that I've surrendered to it, it brings me joy every minute of my life.
Mm.
You know, when I really sense deep within me that when we are connected to our true path in life, we are also connected to God's path that has been laid out for us.
Mm.
Conflict and unhappiness and tension and fear and all of this stuff, anger, comes from being out of alignment with life's purpose.
Mm.
And we all need to be in alignment with life's purpose, and that's why meditation is so critically important. Because most people are afraid to align themselves with life's purpose. They stay in jobs too long, relationships too long, or they don't open themselves up to allowing themselves to give into the situation, so they don't have a conceptual idea of this is a good job or a bad job, a good relationship or a bad one, but they know through discrimination whether they're in the right place or their attitude towards it needs adjustment. When we're connected to our heart, we know these things instinctively. They come to us through guidance, through insight. And when we're connected to our life's purpose, we're doing exactly not only what we want to do, but what life wants us to do, what God wants us to do as well. So that's where I'm at.
Mm.
I'm following my path, but it's my path.
It's
uniquely my path. The end result is all of our destiny. To reach the heart, to reach the truth, to reach love, to reach God, the universe. Pick the number, the word, it doesn't matter. To get to that place of freedom is where we all, that is the place we call home.
Mm.
That is the place we call God. That is the place we call love. It's all the same.
Mm. It's like interesting, just the term surrendered. Now, I guess to the mind, like surrender means something completely different to what it means to the heart. And rather than being the mind often perceives surrender as a position of weakness, whereas the heart knows that it is in fact quite the most powerful place or stance that you can take in the world.
Oh, absolutely.
But, yeah,
the heart is the source of strength. You know, if you've ever seen anybody who's afraid or anxious, or you know, their energy is all over the place. It's up and down. There's no focus. There's no. They may, you know, like I know for me, I made millions of dollars. So what?
Mm.
It never brought me any happiness. You know, during 1929, people with all that money were jumping off buildings.
Mm.
The attachment to something that doesn't last, it doesn't give anything lasting. It's what we were talking about before. But in the heart, you're in the present moment. There is no shift.
Mm.
It's always uniquely consistent.
Mm.
When we're in that zone, everything works perfectly. Nothing is lost. There is no past. There is no future. Every single moment is brand new, and every single moment is eternal. And the only way to know that is through meditation and through the direct experience. And then you know it's true. You know how the scriptures talk about, and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that knowing the truth is not knowing it in the head, because every thought is changing moment to moment. What they're talking about is wisdom. What they're talking about, the word knowing, is experience. And so if you just change the word know to the word experience, you would hear, and you shall experience the truth, and that experience of the truth will set you free. You can't learn it. It can't be given to you by a book or a teacher. You have to go inside and experience it within yourself. Then you know it's true.
Mm. Amazing. Now, this question actually comes from Mona.
Ruth, I hope I answered your question.
Yeah, it was a great question, Ruth. Thank you. This one comes from Mona, and Mona asks, greetings and thanks for making this rather timeless quest available to all of us, Damien. I would be interested in your take on other meditation techniques beyond the classic sitting still, cross-legged, and aim to quiet your mind chatter.
Great question, and you know, I gave the answer before, and if you see, and again, this is not judgmental. Please, a lot of love to you for that question, because it's one. You see how the mind comes in and how it forgets. The mind comes in and has other ideas and concepts, but But when we go back to what the real issue is, what is meditation? Meditation is a state of being. It doesn't matter what we do or where we are. Because when you're in the zone, it doesn't matter whether you're in a castle or you're with Mother Teresa in New Delhi somewhere, you're sweeping garbage off the floor. You're happy no matter where you are because you're in that state. You see, it is not a place. It is not a thing. It's not something you do. It's something you are. We are not human doings. We are human beings. That is the true meaning of letting go, of surrender. And then we get guidance from within, and that guidance directs us on what we are supposed to do in the moment. Damien, in the present moment, not in the past, which is old memories which are not real, and nothing we project onto the future. In the moment, when we get the guidance, we know exactly what to do then and there. That's the zone. That's what Michael Jordan wrote about in his book, For the Love of the Game, that when they were playing for the championship and there was 55 seconds left on the clock. By the way, his team meditated. Phil Jackson was a meditator, the coach. And he made everybody on the team read his book on meditation, this book he had on meditation, and they meditated before every game. When he took over the team, they had never won a championship. After meditating, they won six in a row. He's now the winningest coach in the NBA of all time. He attributes it all to meditation.
Wow.
Suddenly, meditation, they don't call him the Zen master or this weird guy who sits around cross-legged trying to teach guys how to play basketball. Now he's the greatest coach in the history of the NBA.
Wow.
And he did it with the Los Angeles Lakers with Kobe Bryant and Shaquille O'Neal, and he did it with Michael Jordan and that whole team. You get into the zone, Michael said, and everything happens perfectly. And it's in the present moment. There's nothing else going on. It can't. If something is going on in your head, at the moment you're trying to do something, it actually inhibits the ability to do it. My basketball coach in high school used to say, you can't shoot a basketball and think about how to shoot it at the same time. The thought itself will become a distraction. Bruce Lee, the great martial artist, after he broke a wall of bricks with his bare hand, he was asked by the commentator how he did that. It was so incredible that somebody would have that kind of power. He said, we all do, Bruce Lee said. He said, what you need to do is meditation is the key to martial arts. The end results of martial arts is not to be able to break bricks or hurt somebody, but to get in a state of meditation, of freedom. And he said, when you go to break bricks, you bring your mind into a one-point focus. You draw all of the energy into one-point focus so that when you strike those bricks, you're meeting it with the essence and power, creative source, within you. If you are thinking of anything in that moment, the bricks won't break, but your hand will shatter into 1,000 pieces. So it's, again, the mind distracting the heart.
That's an excellent answer. And thank you, Mona, for that question. Now, this one comes from Daniel, who is in the U.S., and Daniel says, hello, Alan, and thanks, Damien, for reaching this man and his message. My question then, I feel a passion to share enlightened understandings with those trapped by their own unconscious and lower-level thinking, especially troubled teens, those in lock-up or rehabs, even school children. Aside from sharing at 12-step meetings and the like, how else might I make an even greater impact?
Boy, these people did their homework, didn't they? That's another really sweet, sweet question. You know, for me, you know, as I've been, you know, for 30 years with this practice, when I come into situations where I'm faced with a lot of intensity or negativity or situations where I'm not really sure how to handle it, which is kind of the best way as an invocation to go into the heart. I always ask myself, my great teacher, my great meditation teacher, I look through his eyes. I try to vision myself looking through his eyes and saying, what would he do in this situation? How would he handle it? And if you look through the eyes and the wisdom of all of the great sages, you know, Buddha and Gandhi and Martin Luther King and Jesus and whoever you want to pick, they were people of compassion. When they saw somebody who was acting out or angry or whatever they were doing in a negative way, what they saw was somebody who was suffering. And they never took it personally because they realized that they were just acting out of their own uncomfortable, unhappy state. And they recognized in the moment that what could I do to help uplift this situation? Respond with anger? Respond with judgment? Respond with guilt and shame? Or to offer my compassion from my heart? And you know, in doing that, that's a kind of a nice thing to say. But think about this, everybody. When we offer compassion and love to somebody else, that compassion and love must emanate and come from the only place it exists, in our heart. Our heart must open and must allow the contents, which is love and joy and compassion, to come out. And when we offer compassion and love, in order for it to get to anybody else, it must first come through us and uplift and bring joy and love to ourselves. Giving love is the way in which we receive it. But the real truth is, you can't give love until you first receive it. You know, the line is, you got to give to receive. The real truth is, you have to receive it first in order to give it. In order to uplift anybody or help anybody, we have to offer love and compassion from our own heart. And in that sense, we uplift ourselves before anything or anyone else. So we all benefit from it. And there is nobody out in the world that is coming at us with any kind of negativity that is not suffering on some level. So what do we do to help them? We offer them our heart. And that doesn't mean we walk up to them and say, I love you, you're great, and we respect everything they're doing. No, it doesn't mean that at all. It means that we are operating from that place of compassion.
That's very powerful. Now, I've just got one last question from Catherine in Canada, and it links back
to... Did that get it?
Absolutely. I thought it was excellent.
Okay, good.
Answer. Yeah, this one's from Catherine in Canada, and Catherine asks, and I guess it ties into what we were talking about earlier on with being in that zone. How do I stay in the now? What tools can I use?
Well, after about 50 minutes worth of talking about meditation, I think we have a word. But seriously, I know what she's saying because, you know, again, if we can start off with the understanding that the reason we lose that state, for me, what has evolved over the years has been very beautiful. Because for most of us, we live our daily lives in a very unconscious way, and that's not judgmental. Most of us don't remember what we did 5 minutes ago, let alone what we did a year ago or 10 years ago or God knows when. We forget. We continue to forget because thoughts in the mind continue to change. Now, the more conscious we become, the more aware of the fact that the mind is just pulling us all over the place, that thoughts are running rampant. And the more we become conscious, the more we see how the mind is operating. And we begin to realize that we have choices. That's what my teacher was talking about when he said, oh man, wake up, you've been sleeping too long. He was talking about being led around by the mind, our own mind, our own thought process. that we are literally all through the day, without realizing it, describing the experiences and the actual day that is happening around us. We're actually creating it by what we're thinking, but we're not aware of it.
Mm.
So we feel victimized. We feel like we have no choices. We feel totally out of sync with things, separate and out of control. But when we begin to wake up to realize that it's only the mind, only the thoughts going on in the mind that are doing this, you step back like you're sitting in a movie theater, and you just take a look at what's going on there, and you will see the mind describing exactly how you're feeling. Somebody who's looking at the world and saying, what a beautiful day, I'm loving it, I'm enjoying it so much, I'm going to see my children, I'm going to the show tonight, and life is beautiful. These people aren't unhappy. Because all their thoughts are describing a happy state. And if the same mind is describing, life is horrible, I have this terrible headache, I can't stand my kids, I hate my job, life is garbage, I wish I was dead.
Mm.
How could we be experiencing joy? It's the mind describing our state that creates the actual experience. Once we're aware of it, it becomes a signal to wake up. You know, they called Buddha the awakened one because he was constantly aware. And while you're awake, you can choose to shift into the heart, into the place of joy, into that state of meditation.
Mm.
You become what we call in yoga detached.
Mm.
Not insensitive, but highly sensitive, highly aware, highly conscious, and operating from that heart place, which is the state of freedom and joy.
Mm. Awesome. Well, Alan, our hour has slipped by so rapidly today, but
has it really? My God,
it's flown. But I really wanted to take this opportunity to thank you from my heart for actually guiding all of us today back into that heart space. I know in our modern context of distraction and overwhelm, quite often it's very difficult to navigate back to that heart space when we're so engaged in the mind. And I think the wisdom and insight really provided an opening, certainly for me this evening, and I'm sure I'm speaking on behalf of everyone else who has tuned in. So I just wanted to thank you wholeheartedly for sharing your wisdom.
I enjoyed so much doing it. And you know, we need to let go of the word try.
Mm.
And because trying is struggle. Struggle is conflict. And we need to let go of the word hard.
Mm.
The only reason things appear to be hard is because we've been practicing negativity for so long.
Mm.
That to practice ease and sweetness and joy is something that is not in our consciousness because we've not been practicing it.
Mm.
That's why meditation frees us from all of that. And life gets easier and easier. Like Carl Chamberlain talked about in his letter, that love is a great practice.
Mm. Mm, beautiful. Now, Alan, for people who would love to find out more about your work and actually get their hands on a copy of Maximum Security, which I do recommend everyone go and buy a copy. It certainly was transformative for me. How would they actually do that, Alan?
In Maximum Security, the true meaning of freedom. And thank you for that. It's on my. You can get it on my website. And if they go to my, that would be the place to go. You can get it at Amazon and places like that, but and you know, bookstores and stuff. But if you go on Amazon.com, or better still, go to my website, AlanGompers.com. That's A-L-A-N-G as in George, O-M as in Mary, P as in Peter, E-R-S.com. You'll get an autographed copy. I'll be able to sign a copy for everybody. And there are things, you know, in the book, you know, by the way, there's a lot of talk now, you know, when I was out in California negotiating a movie deal, that this may become a movie. And, you know, I don't want to put any you know, horns on it, as we would say as kids. But there seems to be a lot of real good chatter around it, and we're really excited about that possibility, and that would be great. But the book itself, I didn't talk about too much about it today, but it has things in there that continue to this day to blow my mind that those experiences actually happened as a result of meditation while I was in prison and thereafter. And I think everybody will really love it. And I also have a meditation CD, and that CD is called The Power of Meditation. It's on my website as well. You can get it. And I did it because people would ask after they heard me speak, what do I do now? And this CD has four tracks. Two of them are instructions and information around meditation, and then I actually lead you into meditation. There's over an hour and 15 minutes of that, and there's the first two tracks are to help you to sleep, deep relaxation, and help with anxiety and tension. It's a yoga pose called Shavasana, and it's wonderful. People have fed back to me. They've really loved it as well, so those are available. And for anybody, do I have another second or two?
Absolutely, yeah.
One of the things that I still do today, along with traveling all around the country and speaking and doing workshops and stuff to outside groups, I have continued to go back to prisons all over the country as well as Canada to share with the inmates because I understand the kind of suffering and pain that they're going through, having gone through that scene myself, as well as everybody in the outside world too. But it's a special place I identify with. And, you know, we donate books to the inmates, men and women. We've been doing it to places all over. So if anybody out there would like to do that, you can go onto my website and you can buy whatever number of books you'd like. And you can either give them to anybody you know who might be uplifted by such a transformation experience, no matter where they are, whether in prison or in the prison of their own mind. And or you just order the books online, and we will donate them in your name wherever you'd like them to go to, or to just have us take them into prisons and give them away. The feedback we've had feedback from prisoners telling us that it's changed their lives. So this would be a wonderful thing to do, and I know it's my book, but it wasn't written by me; it was written by Grace. So, I mean, I was just there with the in front of the computer. Took me 10 years, by the way.
Well.
So, yeah. So, thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Now, I just actually thought to bring the call to a close, there's a story in your book, Alan, that really touched me. It was actually one of the closing stories of I'll actually get you to narrate it in your own voice, but I guess the story of the young man on the gateway of freedom and leaving the prison. It was a beautiful way to close the book, and I thought it'd be a powerful story to share with people to actually bring our call to a close as well.
You have a good memory, Damien. Yeah, I usually when I do a book signing, or I like to share something from the book. And this was, I had gotten work release after I was commuted by the governor. And I had 15 to life, and I was commuted to 6 to life. And then I got work release, which lets you go back in the world to work during the week, and then you sleep at the facility at night, and they give you the weekends off on furlough. And this was a scene that happened my first day out on work release. I had lined up in the basement in front of God knows how many inmates, and it took like a half an hour to get to the front of the line. That's how packed it was, to walk out into the world for the first time after almost 6 years. Mm-hmm. And so here it is. A long line of inmates was already waiting when I arrived at the release center at 8 o'clock that morning. At the front of the line, two correction officers sat behind a big desk. I took my place at the end of the line and soon found myself becoming agitated. I was anxious to get out into the world again. It seemed this would take some time, and I wanted the line to move more quickly. It's a normal reaction, I told myself, but I was not comfortable. So I closed my eyes, took a few deep breaths, and allowed myself to slow down. As my whole being relaxed and became clear, I asked, what's the message for me in this situation? What do I need to learn? The answer came instantly. Patience. Let the game come to you, a voice deep inside reminded me. You are an eternal being. What's the rush? Where are you going? Enjoy the play. With that insight, the edginess and tension began to dissolve, and I was able to let go. Right in front of me, in line, was a Spanish kid in his mid-20s who was animated and excited. He was from my dormitory. We had never spoken before, but we acknowledged each other. He told me he'd been down in prison for 8 years and hadn't seen the street since he was 17 years old. His whole family was waiting for him outside the facility, including his girlfriend, whom he was planning to marry as soon as he was paroled. He kept saying to me how happy he was and how much he had to look forward to. He was through messing around with drugs and hanging out on the streets. God had given him a second chance, and he was going to run with it and do the right thing. His mood was infectious. It took us almost a half hour to get to the head of the line. When his turn came, the young man shook my hand and turned to me and said, well, man, wish me luck. Here I go. And his face broke out, wreathed in an enormous smile that just lit up the whole room. As I let go of his hand, he turned quickly to face the desk and the guard behind it. Wipe that smile off your face, you punk-ass mother. You can fill in the blank. And pay attention to what I'm going to tell you, the guard bellowed. In an instant, the beautiful, engaging smile on the young man's face turned into an ugly scowl. The transformation was so dramatic, it seemed as if a different person had taken his place. For a split second, I thought he would leap over the desk and go for the guard's throat, but instead, he began a barrage of expletives that brought the room to total silence. The guard pointed his finger in the kid's face and warned him that he was treading on dangerous ground. But the kid was out of control, and each time the guard warned him to calm down, he became more furious and irrational. In a flash, a half dozen correction officers appeared and grabbed him from behind. But nothing could stop him. He continued to scream obscenities at the guard behind the desk. He fought like a wild animal, the veins in his neck distending as if they were going to explode. Then the guards had him in handcuffs, and in a flash, he was gone. I stood there staring at the door he just passed through. In one surreal moment, this young man had destroyed his entire life and completely shattered his dreams. I'm going to read that sentence again. Listen, everybody. In one surreal moment, this young man had completely destroyed his life and shattered his dreams. A few minutes before, he was happy, excited, and filled with possibility. In the blink of an eye, it was all gone. I was trying to gather a perspective on what I had just witnessed when I heard the same officer shouting obscenities again. This time, he directed the tirade at me. I had my back to his desk and was apparently holding up the line. I quickly turned to face him. I did not react to anything he said. I stood silently before him, waiting for him to finish yelling at me. He carried on a while longer and then stopped, and he glared at me through narrowed eyes, daring me to say anything. He was taunting me as he had the Spanish kid, but I was not walking into that trap. All of my years of meditation and all of the teachings I had received in that moment were fully there to guide and support me. This was the moment of meditation. This was where the practices became practical, where theory became reality. I could allow this prison guard to break me down and cause me to lose my contentment and power, or I could choose. I could choose to stay grounded and focused in my heart. I could choose to stay grounded and focused in my heart, no matter what he did. I understood that he could lock me up or let me go on my way. He had that choice, and he also had the power to back it up. But I had a choice too, and I also had power. I could choose to accept whatever happened. I could choose to accept whatever happened. And I had the power to do that without losing my contentment and without losing my inner freedom. This was the ultimate choice, and it was the only one that mattered to me. As I was reminded of this great teaching, every part of me came alive and gained strength. It didn't matter any longer what he did to me. I didn't need anything from him, nor from the world in that moment. What I wanted was to stay connected to who I was and to maintain complete faith and trust in my true self. I knew that if I could do that, the universe, God, would execute the next step in my life perfectly. The God, with a look of disgust, turned a huge logbook around, and he said, "Sign your effing name and get the hell out of here," he snarled. I took the pen, signed my name, turned to him, and said thank you, and walked out the front door. It was as simple as that. I felt as if I had walked through the darkness of hell and into the light. Grace had never left me, even for a second. I stepped out the door and immediately encountered the Spanish kid's family. There they were, on the sidewalk, just as he said they would be, anxiously awaiting for him to walk through the door and into their arms. My heart ached for all of them, especially my young friend, knowing that this beautiful reunion would never happen. Months later, I heard the price this young man had paid. He was locked up that same day and shipped back upstate a week later. His work release was revoked, and at his parole hearing, the parole board sentenced him to 2 more years in prison without any guarantees of ever being released. A few years before, that could have been me. I might have blown my chance too, thanks to grace, thanks to the meditation practices that I had followed so diligently. I didn't. Under the same set of circumstances, I had made it back to the world, free again, after 6 years, my destiny unfolding with each step. Once again, my body was free. But more important than anything, I was free. I was living the true meaning of freedom.
Wow. It's a very, very powerful story, Alan, and a very appropriate way to end the incredible hour that we've just spent together. But I just really wanted to take this opportunity to thank you and really open my heart and say what a fantastic thing it has been that you've dedicated the last 30 years of your life, or 3 decades, to this practice, and also sharing and passing on this wisdom with other people. It's just been a real honour to be a part of this conversation over the last hour, and I thank you on behalf of everyone wherever they are in the world.
You know, can I just leave them with one note?
Sure.
I have this 10 Commandments to Freedom that I use in my workshop, the 10 Keys to Freedom. The first one is to overcome the fear in your life by following your heart. Allow meditation to break through your fear. The opening line in my book, for those who wish to end pain and suffering in your life, know that it is fear and fear alone that stands as the gatekeeper to freedom. Follow your heart, no matter where it takes you, even if it's difficult or uneasy or frightening, because if you stay in your heart and follow your dreams, you will always wind up being where you need to be, and life will become a joy.
Cool. Thank you, Alan. And thank you, everyone at home. The questions that come in week to week are always inspiring, as is the feedback that you share on the site. Now, for those of you who would love to listen to this call again, we will be making it available for free on the People You Should Meet website tomorrow. So do check back and listen to it again and again. Another thing that we do at People You Should Meet is encourage inspired action. And if you believe that this material could change the life of a friend, a colleague, a loved one, do take that first step forward and actually share this, the free recording, with the people that you feel will be inspired by it. We've just added to the site a whole range of different share buttons that make it really easy for you to share it on the online networks such as Facebook and Twitter and the other social bookmarking sites. So please do take that first step forward and actually share this material widely.
Well, that's great. And I want to thank everybody also for the opportunity to share everything with them today. The questions were great. And Damien, you were great. And I appreciate so much being here with you today. And you are wonderful at what you do. And, you know, I do so much enjoy the ballet between the two of us. And I thank you for that.
Excellent. Alan, I look forward to many more inspiring conversations in the future.
Absolutely.
And thank you again, everyone at home. Have a good day.
Great day.